This is the beginning of Session 10 in Mastering the Art of Follow-Through. I really hope you're enjoying all this information so far. We have certainly covered a lot of it, haven't we? Just as in the previous sessions, don't forget what the beep means. It means that we're going from the call back here into the studio. So let's get started now with Session 10.
Hi, everybody. This is Debbie from Virginia. I'm just so excited to be on this call tonight and welcoming Gary. This is Session 10 in our 12-week program. I know everybody's really anxious to get started. You know, have you ever thought about what might be the number one reason why people don't follow through with their goals? Well, the number one reason is fear. You know, in this session, Gary's really going to go into this with us and talk about the two fears that most people have, the fear of failure and the fear of success, believe it or not. You know, at one time or another, many of us have probably had to tackle these fears, and some of us are struggling with them even now. And so Gary's going to help us get to the core of why we have these challenges, and more importantly, what we can do to manage them or eliminate them, which is what we all want to do. So once again, welcome personal growth expert and life strategist, Gary Cox.
Well, Debbie, thanks again for joining in, and appreciate the intro. We're already at Session 10. Can you imagine that? We're nearly about 3 months into this program, and yes, time does fly. It's hard to imagine that we've been working on this together week to week for nearly 3 months. Session 10, I think you're really going to enjoy. We're going to talk about, as Debbie mentioned, perhaps the number one reason a lot of people fail to follow through, and that's the fear of failure and the fear of success. Before we continue with Session 10, let's go ahead and do a quick review on some of the information we discussed last week in Session 9. Last week, we talked about what it means to deserve something. A lot of people don't really feel they deserve it. We talked about what it was and how to clearly define each one of our individual its. And then if we felt that we didn't deserve it, we talked about how we could work to try to change that so we do feel, if you will, that we are worthy of achieving or deserving it, however we defined it. We also talked about the importance of paying the price. Always remember, anything in life that you want to get, you've got to give something up. We always have to pay a price. But before we're saying, yes, hey, I'm willing to pay the price, remember, before we get caught into that, and again, if I take 1,000 people and ask them, how many of you here are willing to pay the price, most everybody will say, yes, I am willing to pay the price. But how can we say that if we haven't taken the time to firmly establish what the price is? So before we say we're willing to pay the price, let's really figure out what it means to pay that price. What specifically are we going to have to do to pay that price? Why? Because all that glitters isn't gold. We also talked about the importance of not getting overly emotionally involved into setting your goals. A lot of people base their goals or set their goals strictly on emotion. A lot of our goals are at least started with emotion. Emotion plays a very important role. But if we only use emotion to set our goals, sooner or later, logic's going to take over, and we're going to realize, wow, this is a little bit more challenging than I realized. I never thought this or that would happen. So we want to mix both emotion and logic into the goal-setting process. So that was basically, in a nutshell, what we talked about in Session 9. And now we're ready to move on to Session 10. Hopefully you have your information with you. We're on page 1, Session 10. The first question is, how well do I handle the fear of failure? Fill in the blanks with fear of failure. Of course, this question originated from Session 1 when we went through all these different questions and statements and we evaluated ourselves individually. If you have followed through the entire program, it might be a good time now to go back to Session 1 and find what you evaluated yourself under this particular question. How well do I handle the fear of failure? Were you able to put a 10? Great. Were you able to put a 2? Okay, we got something to work on. Whatever it is that you had as an evaluation number, what is it today? Is it getting any better? Today, though, we should even be able to take it to another level once we go through this information. So let's go to the next statement now. The ability to master failure will greatly depend on your perception of it. Put the word perception in there. The ability to master failure will greatly depend on your perception of it. So what do we mean when we say your perception of it? What does that really mean? Well, here's a scenario. We start working toward a plan and it doesn't go our way. I'm sure none of you have ever had that experience before. Maybe it's just me. No, you know you have. So we start working on a plan. It doesn't go our way. Things really go bad. Okay, here's one perception. I'm a failure. Everything I try never seems to work. I've said it myself. That's one perception. The other perception would be, wow, this didn't work. I'm going to have to try it again. That's the perception we really want. We're going to learn how to adopt better perceptions, perceptions like this. But here's the thing, though. It's okay to say something like, oh, this didn't work. I'm going to have to try it again. It's okay to say that while you're crying. Because sometimes when things don't go our way, we still feel the pain. We can still work on changing the perception. Oh, wow, I got to do this over again. I'm going to have to do something differently. When you say that, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to eliminate all the pain from it and all the anxiety. Sometimes we're still going to feel some of that pain. That's why I say it's okay to say some of this stuff sometimes when you're crying. But you want to make sure of something, though. What is it that you want to make sure of? If you're buying into the right perception, now you're saying, hey, this didn't work. I'm going to have to try something else, do it differently. You want to make sure you do the following. You want to make sure that you do try it again or do it another way. That is how you know you're adopting the right perception. Now, if you just try to say, well, this didn't work, but I'm going to have to try it again, and you don't try it again, you're just talking words. Remember, what we have to do, we have to walk our talk. That is one way that you prove that you have the right perception. The right perception would mean to figure out how you would word things so if you were to follow through on those words, you would keep going forward and you would try it again or try it differently. It doesn't mean it's not going to hurt, but you would try it differently. So that's why we have to walk our talk. You can say this all you want, but if you're not going to try it again, if you're not going to get back up and go forward, then you're not walking your talk. That's the importance. Let's go to the next statement in page 1, session 10. Adopting the proper perception, we're going to put the word perception in again. Adopting the proper perception helps develop the right attitude. Perception is important, but what makes adopting the right perception is it helps us adopt the right attitude. So if we have the wrong attitude or a negative attitude, are we going to follow through? Chances are most likely that we're not going to follow through. Why? Because we had the wrong perception, the perception that stated everything I try, it never works. That's going to develop the wrong attitude. That attitude is going to prevent us from wanting to go forward. If we develop the right perception, that's going to give us the right attitude. Now, when we talk about having the right attitude through a proper perception, what do we really mean? Let's go to the next statement. What does having the right attitude really mean? What does having the right attitude really mean? Ultimately, it means going forward. But let me give you an illustration. True story, it happened to me years ago. I was flying an airplane from the Caribbean, landed in Fort Lauderdale to clear customs. There seemed to be some problems. I had a mechanic look at the airplane. He said the airplane was good enough to go to the next destination to go replace that airplane with something else. I was in the air about 20 minutes. Before you know it, I had oil all over the windshield, lost my oil pressure. I had to put the airplane down between a barricade and a crane. Fortunately, I did not damage the airplane, nor was I hurt. What's my perception now? I have two choices here. That's it. I'm quitting flying. I'm never going to do this again. Or, and this was my perception, fortunately, the perception was, wait a minute, why would I want to quit? Here I spent thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars and many, 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 many hours learning how to handle situations like this, and here it comes up, and fortunately I was able to handle it successfully, and now I want to quit? Well, that doesn't make any sense. I want to take advantage of all the experience that I put together working to get to this point where there was a major problem. I handled the problem, and now if I keep going forward, I'm going to have that much experience, that much more experience. So that's what a right attitude really does. Now, that's easier said than done, and I will be very honest with you. When I went back in the next airplane to go and get my friends and family back in the Caribbean, did I feel a little uncomfortable? Absolutely, but I still went forward. You've heard the example before. It's nothing new to us. Babe Ruth, he had to make a lot more strikes than he did home runs. Now, we look at that and we reason with that. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. But do we really adopt that type of thinking? We tell a child when it falls down after walking or trying to walk, we help it get back up. They try to talk, and we try to get them to talk again and say it again and say it again. And we work for months and months just to try to get them to say mommy. We don't want them to give up. With regards to the analogy of Babe Ruth, yes, we know logically the more you're up to bat, the more strikes you're going to make. And inevitably, if you make more strikes and you're willing to go up to bat, you're going to get more what? You're going to get more home runs. But are we really able to apply that? We know this logically, but are we applying it? So are we allowing ourselves to go up to bat? Going up to bat means you're working on your action steps, you're working on your sub-goals, you're working on your goals to get up to the bat there, get up to the plate, and swing. Sometimes we fail, sometimes we don't. But as long as we keep going up to that plate, we have the opportunity to make a home run. But here's the challenge. The challenge happens between successes. See, if we only go up to bat once in a while, and once in a while we get a home run, the danger is we're waiting too long not to necessarily get the home run. We're only waiting too long because we're getting the home runs once in a while. Here's what I mean by that. Let's say if you go up to bat 100 times and you do, I don't know anything about, you know, baseball, but let's say you go up to bat 100 times and you make 10 home runs. But you were able to go up to bat 100 times in 1 week. That's a lot of batting. So in 1 week you made 10 home runs. But now let's say that you go up to bat 100 times over an entire year. You're only going to do a home run about once a month. Look at the gap that you're going to have between successes. And when you have a large gap between successes, this is where the fear of failure starts to come in. But if we can do those 100 action steps in a week, in other words, go up to bat and have the opportunity of swinging 100 times in that week, we're going to have the opportunity of making 10 home runs in that week. But if we do it all over a year, it's going to be that much more time between successes. So make sure that you work on that. How do you make sure you work on that? Well, how do you eliminate this length between successes? You have to do what? You have to go up to bat more often. And if we are consumed with the fear of failure, we're not going to be able to do that. One of the things that prevent us from being able to do that, going up to bat, is a lot of people will say, well, what if? You know the what ifs? Well, what if this doesn't happen? What if this doesn't happen? And they keep feeding themselves because they're waiting too long between times of going up to bat. And the longer that we wait, the more opportunity we allow the thought process, the negative things, to sink in our mind. Something that's kind of interesting that we do. I take groups every so often to the Caribbean. We do a little program there. There's a cliff that we actually jump off of into the ocean. And what's interesting is when we jump off into the ocean is so crystal clear. It's literally, it just looks like just a clear glass of water. And it's really hard for you to figure out how deep the water is because it's so clear, it doesn't look very deep because you can see the sand right there. And what's interesting is when we take somebody on that cliff to jump off, the longer they take to try to quote-unquote psych themselves up, the less of a chance they have in succeeding. Because what happens is the longer they take to go up to bat, the longer they take to go up to the end of that cliff, the more opportunity the negativity or the fear has to go ahead and fill the mind. So what I teach people to do is go through the thinking process where they take one step, two step, three step, jump. And they have to do that in their mind, one step, two step, three step, jump. If they go one step, two step, three step, oh my goodness, look at that. All of a sudden now they're starting to feed their mind. And when they feed their mind, the chances of them taking that jump are going to be very slim. That's why it's important to make sure you don't have a long time between successes, and you decrease that length of time if you constantly force yourself to go up to bat. So it's easy to say, yes, oh yeah, I agree with all this, but do you feel it? In other words, will you walk the talk? So agreeing is one thing, feeling it is another, but making sure you do it, that's the challenge. Well, now let's go ahead and talk about the next statement. We must be able to see the difference, fill in the blank there with difference, we must be able to see the difference between a plan not working We must be able to see the difference between a plan not working or failing and feeling like a failure. Let me repeat that. We must be able to see the difference between a plan not working or failing and feeling like a failure. It's important, friends, that we try to learn this information when things aren't so challenging, because we can start figuring out how this all works. Okay, here's the right thought process that we need if we had the right perception. Okay, I don't feel this yet, so let me work on this. The time to learn to master this stuff is when things aren't so challenging. Now, of course, some of you listening to this, things are pretty challenging right now, so you're going to have to really work diligently to get this mastered, because if you don't, that fear of failure is going to win, and we can't afford that to happen. You have to work on adopting it by moving forward after you fail or you feel things don't go right. So back to the statement, we must be able to see the difference between a plan not working or failing and feeling like a failure. So what's the difference here? Again, perception. Somebody could have a plan, they work toward the plan, it doesn't come about the way they expected. So they have a choice to either think, okay, the plan didn't work out, the plan itself failed, or I am a failure. Obviously, if we have the ability, which we want to have and we want to work on if we don't, if we have the ability to understand this particular plan did not work, and we look at it as a plan and don't take it personally, we're going to be well ahead of the game. But every time something doesn't go our way, if we take it personally and we personally feel that we are a failure or we personally feel like a failure, we're going to continue to reward the thought process that we are failing. No one likes to feel like a failure. This is the difference. This is where we have to draw the line. When things don't go our way, we've got to be able to see it's the plan that didn't work, not the person. Okay, maybe you implemented the wrong plan. That's understandable. It happens and it will continue to happen. That's just part of going forward. That's part of making that strike. Let's go to the next statement. What I'd like you to do now is I'd like you to list past failures. Notice the quotes there, quote unquote, past failures, because the quote unquote is helping us see it's a perception. I want you to list past failures or things that didn't work out or go your way. Anything. It could be if you're in business, something with business. If it's in personal, maybe it's a quote-unquote failed marriage. Something along the line that you might think of that just didn't work out. I want you to put this information down. I'll give you an example of something that I did. And I've got, believe me, if you think I have some successes, then for every success I have, I probably have 500 failures to equal to each success that I might have. I remember I was doing some little marketing plan in the business, and I put out 10,000 mailers. That cost a lot of money to put out 10,000 mailers. I got one response. It was a lady that said, "How in the world did you get my address? Get me off of your list." She was not very happy. Here's the key. If you have the right perception, what will you say? Well, automatically, you know, if you have the wrong perception, you're going to say, "See, there I go again. I tried something else. I spent all this money and I failed again. And nothing ever works for me." If you have the right perception, we'll want to say something different. "Wow, this cost me a lot of money, but this is how I'm going to learn. I can't really afford this, but this is part of the game. This is how it happens. This is part of going forward." If you can say that, great. Sometimes we have to force ourselves to say that even though we don't feel it. At least that's a start. But now we spoke about earlier walking your talk. So here's how we walk our talk. Sooner or later, you're going to have to pay the bill for this, right? Well, I did, and I remember distinctly paying the bill for this, and I made sure that I didn't whine about it, because, see, I want to walk my talk. So when I cut the check, I think it was like $5,000, and it was not a nice $5,000 check to cut, because you just feel like, okay, you're burning it in the fire, but you're really not. I had to learn something. I learned from this. But the key is that when I wrote the check, I didn't say, "Well, see, that was so stupid. Why did I even try that? I mean, I knew it wasn't going to work anyway." And if you start saying things like that, are you walking your talk? You know the answer. The answer is no. If you start saying things like that, your brain's going to remember it. So what's going to happen if it's going to remember it? Well, what's going to happen is next time you try the next plan or the next idea, your brain's going to say, "Yeah, you remember that? Oh, yeah, you remember the pain writing that check too, and you're going to try it again, you fool." We can't allow that to happen, because if we allow that to happen, can we follow through and take action? Absolutely not. So with this exercise, the idea of this exercise is to start getting you to think about things that you've done in your past. And then once you have that written down, we go to the next statement on page 1, session 10. How many of these do you take personally? Fill in the blank there with personally. How many of these do you take personally? Think about that. This exercise is simply a measuring rod to let you see if you view these as mishaps or you view them as something that you personally failed at. And if you're able to put things down, now of course, I know most of you, or perhaps a lot of you, know my story. I don't have enough room there to fill out the failures or the things that did not go my way. I could go on and on and on and on. But I finally was able to get to the point that I truly, truly not only can say it, but can feel it, that these things that happened to me, and some people say they happen for a reason. Okay, maybe so. Sometimes that's hard to buy. It's hard to accept that when these quote-unquote negative things are happening. But the key is, even though they happen, you can still, if you're doing this right, you can still look back and say, look, this is going to be a learning lesson. This is part of the learning curve. And you want to be able to walk your talk when you say that. If you can't walk your talk, at least try to say it. And then go ahead and force yourself to walk the talk. That's one of the ways to help you keep going forward. And it's very difficult at times, because if you're willing to go up to bat a lot, you're going to probably, quote unquote, fail a lot. In other words, a lot of things aren't going to go your way. Go back to the analogy again of the baseball. We go up to bat, we strike out, and we strike out, and we strike out, we get a home run. We go back up to bat again, and we go back up to bat, and we strike out, and we strike out, but we have another home run. There's two home runs right there. But if we go up to bat once every 3 months, it's going to be forever before we get home runs. That's the key. And when we are mastering this, in other words, when we're forcing ourselves to go up to bat as much as possible, we need to prepare ourselves mentally. For example, if you look at yourself and you analyze things and say, you know what, I'm not going up to bat enough. I can see that. It's obvious from what I'm hearing today that I'm not going up to bat enough. What do? You say to yourself, okay, we're going to start going up to bat more. I do know this. I do know if I'm going to go up to bat more, I'm going to increase my chances of different failures. I'm going to increase my odds of striking out more, obviously, because you're going to go up to bat more. But at the same time, if I'm willing to strike out more, I'm going to have higher odds of getting home what? Home runs. You need to prep yourself for that. Also, if you're the type of person that will have the tendency to feel as if you may be a failure, you've got to prepare yourself to handle that by writing down things like, this is just a perception. I'm going to have to continue to go up to bat and make many more strikes before I get home runs. I literally remember, and this is a true story, several friends would tell me after I would tell them all the things I would go through to try to get to this level. Some of them would say to me, Gary, do you ever feel at times that you're jinxed? And I sometimes would feel that way. It's like, my goodness, why can't something go right? And the reason was, and I really was able to understand this and not just say it but feel it, I go up to bat so many times. And the more you're up to bat, you're going to have a higher odd of quote-unquote failing, if you will, not as a person, but your ideas or strategies. But at the same point, the good side of it is, because you're willing to go up to bat more, you're going to get a lot more home runs. Let's go to the next statement. If you view any items on this list or on your list as a personal failure, how might you change your perception? Important. If you view any items on your list as a personal failure, in other words, you look at some of this and say, you know, as I read that, yep, I do feel like a failure, how might you change your perception? Number one, if you feel like a failure, admit it. We've spoke before, you can't change what you don't acknowledge. And then we want to try to work on changing the perception, which we'll touch on in just a little bit. So if you feel that these things make you feel like a failure, let's admit it. Okay, hey, this stuff makes me feel like a failure, and that's why I'm having a hard time going forward. Now, what I've got to do, once we've acknowledged it, what I've got to do is I've got to try to change the perception. I've got to try to change the perception. What we have to master is, what would the perception be what would be the positive perception? And for some people, because they're the picture in the frame, they cannot figure out, and they're not used to thinking this way, they can't figure out what a positive perception would be. So the positive perception would be, we could go back to the baseball illustration again, this quote-unquote failed, but I have to go up to bat, and the more I go up to bat, I just happen to go up to bat, and I got a strike, I've got to go up to bat again. Now remember, this is something that you're learning to adopt if you fit this category. You're learning to adopt this. And this is something that, as you say, that you've got to work on trying to walk the talk. But it's okay also to say this. It's not the best thing to say, but again, you're acknowledging things. Sometimes when I do things, I just feel like I can't do anything right. Now, I used to say that a lot. And I would still have some successes along the way because I would go up to bat so much and nothing would just seem to go my way. But sometimes it just took time. I just had to wait in there long enough. But here's the magic word here I just shared with you. See if you can find it in a sentence. I just feel like I can't do anything right. See, there's a big difference between saying, I just feel like I can't do anything right, or I just can't do anything right. You see the difference? If you say, I just can't do anything right, we've kind of put ourselves in a box where we just can't really get out. But if we add one word, the word feel, I just feel like I can't do anything right, here's the advantage of just adding that one word. We're acknowledging that it's a feeling. Here's the important things, friends. Feelings can change. By just putting in the word feel, I just feel like I can't do anything right, you are consciously acknowledging that this really is a feeling, and if I can work on this, I can change this feeling. Isn't that interesting? But if we just say, I just am a failure, or I just can't do anything right, there's a big difference there now because we don't have that word feel in there. What we've done because we have not added that word, we're now taking it totally personally. We're looking at ourselves and say, I can't do anything right. But if we say, I feel like I can't do anything right, that feeling can change to I can do many things right. Important little word there, but very, very powerful. So that's some food for thought, if you will, on the fear of failure. Let's talk about on page 2, session 10, how well do I handle the fear of success? I've had them both. How well do I handle, fill in the blank, the fear of success? If you've been with us all the way through, starting from session 1, I'd recommend at this time, if you have session 1 in front of you, take a look at how you evaluated yourself on our first session. How well do I handle the fear of success? What'd you give yourself? Do you see some improvement? Hopefully you do, especially if you're applying the knowledge and the information that you're learning. Let's go to the next statement. What are some reasons? Fill in the blank with the word reasons. What are some reasons why people have a fear of success? This is an interesting one. What are some reasons why people have a fear of success? There's a lot of different reasons. Tonight we're going to discuss at least 4 of them. Here's the first one. Misconceived ideas. MISCONCEIVED. Misconceived ideas about success and successful people. Every so often you'll hear me spell a word or two. Number one, because I can sympathize with you if you can't spell, because I'm not very good at it and I have to do the spell check here, so I'm going to give you the spelling and make it easier for you. Misconceived ideas about success and successful people. This is one reason why some people have a fear of success. Let me explain this. I remember a guy, his name was Jerry. And I remember this gentleman. This gentleman was quite unique. He knew what I did for a living, and he knew I had a measure of financial success. And he would say to me, you cannot be successful financially, and if you are going to be successful financially, he's just talking about people in general. He said, the only people who are successful financially are people who are crooks. He said, the only way you can be successful financially is that you have to lie and steal. And he believed that. And I knew he believed that, and he proved that he believed that by the surroundings in which this man lived in. It was absolutely deplorable. It was disgusting. I mean, I could not believe a person would think they're at least worthy of living in the condition that this man and his family lived in. But that was his thought process. Somebody somewhere along the line fed him the idea the only way a person can be successful financially is you've got to be a crook and you have to lie and steal. And I'll be honest, at times I felt that way too. I say, my goodness, you know, you try to do something right and you lose from it or something like that. But this is really a limited thought process. But because he bought into this, he could never go forward because he did not want to be a liar and somebody who stole, which is great. I buy that. But because he thought everybody else who's successful was, he didn't want to be a part of it. And boy, he proved that he certainly didn't want to be a part of it. He went the other way. Also, two people have misconceived ideas about successful people. A lot of people have seen somebody that had no success. They watched them climb the quote-unquote financial successful ladder, and they've seen these people change. Now, did the money change them, or did the people allow the money to change them? Yeah, the people allowed the money to change them. And because of that, they don't want to have anything to do with financial success. So this is what we're talking about here with regards to business. So we'll spend a little bit more time on the business or the money end of things. Number two, one of the reasons people have a fear of success is because they have negative associations toward money. One of the reasons why people have a fear of success, number two, is because they have negative associations toward money. This is an interesting comment here. What do we mean by that? Unfortunately, I'm from a family that is a victim, if you will. I am of a divorce, if you will. My mother and father, they divorced. I could have associated divorce to money. I could have said something like, you know, my parents got divorced because money. They were always arguing about money. And for some people, they hear their parents arguing a lot about money. And they're always arguing about the finances. And the kids pick some of this up. And unfortunately, mommy and daddy divorce. And now, in their mind, what caused that divorce? I always heard mommy and daddy arguing about money. And now they get older. They find somebody they love. They don't want a divorce at all. They want to stay with them forever. And they have this mental block about trying to do better for their family financially. Because why? Because if we have more money, we might have more arguments. And oh, I remember when I was 5 years old or when I was 10 years old, mommy and daddy had these arguments and they got a divorce. I don't want that to happen to me. Sometimes people think about this consciously and sometimes they think about it unconsciously. But that is what a negative association toward money will do for people. Also, some people think that money is dirty. Well, tangibly it is, but some people have this association that everything about money is dirty. Maybe the negative association, which we touched on earlier, that money changes people. So because of these thought processes, people have a fear of success. Let's go to the next one. This one's an interesting one. I think a lot of people may fall under this category. Number three, personal feelings of worthlessness. Personal feelings of worthlessness or not feeling deserving. We've touched on this earlier, but here's the challenge for a lot of people. They don't feel they're worthy of it, and again, because maybe their background, how they were grown up, maybe how they were raised, somebody told them that they weren't worthy, they're not going to amount to anything. A lot of people, they'll try to work toward their goals, and a lot of people have financial goals, and that's why we're touching on this. And as they work toward their financial goals, a lot of people feel they're only able to deserve a certain amount. Maybe they have a measuring rod from 1 being the bottom and 10 being the top. And because of their circumstances in life, because of their upbringing, because of their thinking, they may only feel they believe they're worth a 4. Maybe they're at a 2. And they don't really realize what they think they're worth or what they think they're worthy of. They don't know it's a 4 yet, and they start working toward their goals. They feel all excited, and they start getting some of this success, and now they've taken themselves to a 2. See, and subconsciously, remember, they only feel they're worth a 4. They don't really know that yet. Some people don't. And they get to a 3. Things are happening. Things are looking good. And they get to a 4, and they're getting more money, more success. Things are coming together just right. And all of a sudden, they're at that 4 now. But wait a minute. I'm not worthy of anything more than a 4. And they start sabotaging their success. Isn't that interesting? We talked about the analogy earlier in the sessions about how much do you think you're really worth? Do you think you're valuable? Do you think you're worthy of more? And we're not saying that in an arrogant way, but are we put here to be very unhappy? Are we put here to be worthless? I don't think so. Let's go to the next one. And we're going to talk about ways to manage this, so I'm not going to let you hang there. Number four, fear of the unknown. This is an interesting one. I think a lot of people have a fear of success because they do have a fear of the unknown. What is the fear of the unknown? What happens is because they don't have any experience in maybe goal setting. A lot of people don't have any experience in personal growth. And because of this, they see a good opportunity or an idea, and they don't take the time to investigate it any further because of this fear of the unknown. And the fear of the unknown is so large and so big that it suppresses any little opportunity for them to just take a little itty-bitty step just to test the waters. And because of that large fear of the unknown, they won't even just put their feet in the water or just a toe. And because of that, there'll be absolutely no forward movement. And of course, if we don't have any forward movement, we're not able to be able to at least taste some of the possibilities because that fear of the unknown is so large. If we fit under this category, or we have somebody that we know that fits under the category of this fear of the unknown, we've got to at least try to do a little something. Because when we have the fear of the unknown, often we get very overwhelmed. Sometimes we have the fear of the unknown because we can't see ourselves going from where we're at now to way, way over there because there's so much stuff in between. And because we don't have any experience, we're scared by the in-between because we don't know what to expect. So if we can force ourselves or work toward just getting our toes in the water and seeing that, you know what, it's really not that bad, but we've got to at least get to that point. And that's how we can work on eliminating the fear of the unknown, which also will help us eliminate the fear of success. I think obviously now it's time to talk about how to manage the fear of success. Of course, I just gave you four different reasons why people have the fear of success. There are many others that we could go on and discuss here. With regards to how to manage the fear of success, there are a number of ways to do this, and I'm going to go ahead and share with you a four-step process that you can consider in learning to master this. Of course, not knowing what each individual person's goal are, because we're having people literally from all over the world listening in on this tonight, we're going to be limited to the amount of input I can offer because I don't know what everybody's challenge is. And some of you don't have this particular challenge of a fear of success. You're listening to this to learn more, gain more insight, and also be able to take this information and also share it with others. But let's go ahead and get started with that. Number one, we need to try to determine the root cause. R-O-O-T, the root cause. So if you're a victim, for lack of a better word, or if you fit under this category of the fear of success, from some of the information that we've discussed today or in the past, has any information triggered any thoughts or possibilities that may help you determine the root cause of why you might have this fear of success? If so, you'd want to make a note of it. Let's go to the second thing. We want to learn to identify. Identify is the word you want to fill in there. Learn to identify the onset of this fear. Learn to identify the onset of this fear as you, here's the key word, as you work. It's got to take some action. As you work toward your goals. I'll go ahead and go over that again for you one more time. Learn to identify, the blank there is identify, the onset of this fear as you work toward your goals. So what we have to do is we have to look at that feeling. We have to learn to feel that gut feeling when it happens. You know what it's like. You work toward your goal and you get this feeling. And you need to know when that feeling comes on, the onset of it, what it feels like. You want to describe what it's saying to you, what it's doing, how it makes you feel. And here's the key, though. Not only do you want to identify the onset of this feeling of this fear, but you also want to figure out what are the thoughts that are going to start going on after you feel this. Because when we start feeling this fear of failure and this fear of success, you can apply it to either one, but as we're starting to feel this and you identify this fear, what's going to happen is if we were just to let things go mentally, and obviously if we let it go, it would go to the negative because it's the course of least resistance, we would start saying, oh my goodness, if this is going to happen, what happens if this is going to happen, and what if this, and we start going with these thought processes. What we're trying to do is figure out when the onset of this fear starts to happen, because when we figure that out, we can put a stop to the rest or the remaining. And what would be the remaining? The remaining would be the way we would manifest this onset of the fear, and that would be the thought process. That would be the thought process that says, look, you know, I don't deserve this. Whatever that thought process might be, that's what you're looking to start stopping. The only way you're going to start doing that is be more consciously aware of your feelings and your emotions. Unfortunately, when we get some of these negative feelings and emotions, we don't really consciously take the time to acknowledge what's going on. We just reward the junk. And that's the danger. And as we start rewarding it, we become irrational. We start doing really stupid things. We start sabotaging any success that we've already gotten. And the list goes on and on and on and on. That's why, friends, we have to be so consciously aware of what we're doing. I refer to it like walking on eggshells. Often when I have people come into my office, especially when I was doing a lot of face-to-face consultations, as I would work with them, I tell them as they leave my office, they're going to be so acutely aware of every little thing that's going on, they're going to feel for a moment as if they're walking on eggshells. In other words, they're going to be so sensitive, not personally sensitive, but aware sensitive. They're going to be so aware and acutely sensitive as to everything that's going on and how they're responding to things or not responding to things. And that's what we're trying to do here on this second step. We just need to figure out, when does this fear start? When does the onset kick in? And then now we know it's happening. Here's what's happening. I feel it. And if I'm not careful, it's going to start telling me I can't do this. It's going to start telling me all these negative things. And that's what we want to learn to stop and nip in the bud. Now let's go to the next thing that we can do once we've done number two. We go to number three, attack. Attack the root cause and the fear immediately. That's a strong word, attack. Fill in the blank with root and fear. Attack the root cause and the fear immediately. How can you attack the root cause and the fear if you haven't taken the time to identify the onset of it? That's why number two is so important. So once you have identified the onset, how do we attack it? Well, let's say, for example, that somebody told you years ago you will never be successful. The onset, as you start working toward your goals, you're starting to feel, you know, maybe so-and-so is right. Maybe I am not going to be able to be successful. What did we say we had to do? We have to attack the root cause and the fear immediately. So how do we attack it? We can start off verbally by saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. No. I deserve it like anybody else. There's no reason why I cannot be successful. There's no reason why I cannot continue to go forward. This is what the attack means. If you don't attack it, you sit there passively and let the negative thought process beat you down and beat you down and beat you down. And then you will continue to believe that you should not be successful. But if you come back and attack it and say, no, this is not the right thinking. I'm not going to follow this thinking. I'm not going to manifest this. I'm not going to follow through on this. I'm going to ignore this. Look, I've got to go up to bat. This is just part of the game. You need to have those thought processes that you can come back and attack. And then you attack it also, not just by words, but also by your actions. This is what it means to attack. And when you attack, what do? You just throw one little soft punch at it? Or do you keep punching and punching and punching and going forward? You know the answer. That's the attitude that we have to have. Let's go to the last step. Continue to follow through on your goals. Yes, that's common sense, but at times it can be easier said than done, especially if we have this fear of success. But we have to continue, fill in the blank, with follow through. Continue to follow through on your goals. The interesting thing here is if you attack the root cause and the fear immediately, and you start to work diligently to working on following through on your goals, your brain starts getting this message. The brain starts getting the message that, wait a minute here. Here's the negative junk that I used to say. I'm attacking it, and now I'm going forward. And you'll start getting the connection that every time this fear of success or the fear of failure or any of these other psychological limitations, anytime this fear of success starts having its play on you or the onset starts kicking in, I'm going to attack it, and then I'm going to move on. Sooner or later, the amount of time that you dwell on the fear of success, you will see it become smaller and smaller and more minimized, especially if you attack the root cause very diligently and very hard. So interesting points to think about. Real quickly, we need to try to determine the root cause. If you don't know what the root cause is, or if you're working with somebody, they're not sure, try to dig it out even more. Take some time to try to really figure out the root cause. It's really important and it does help. It's not a 100% must that you have to have it, but it's certainly nice to know where it's starting from. Number two, identify the onset of this fear as you work toward your goals. So a lot of people, here's the key though, notice what I said here, as you work toward your goals. For some people, they know they have a fear of success and they just sit there with that. They don't work toward their goals to figure out how that fear starts playing on them. So if you admit that you have the fear of success, or you know somebody that does, get them to at least figure out what they would have to do to create some of that fear, to get that onset going, get that fear kicking in, because they're going to need to learn how to manage that. And if they just sit back passively and say, yep, I got a fear of success, and I'm not going to do anything, then how are they going to manage it? They're just going to sit there, they're going to do nothing, and they cannot go forward. So again, we want to attack the root cause, and number four, continue to follow through on your goals. Well, we'll do a quick review, session 10, page 1 and 2. One of the things that we want to do to handle the fear of failure is understand that we have to adopt the right perception. It's okay to understand what the wrong perception is, acknowledge what it is, know what it is, but make sure we know what a right or a proper perception is. We don't always believe the proper perception, but what should it be? What should it be? If you knew you were the guy that could handle anything, what would that guy or gal say? What would the proper perception be? Identify it, write it down, and try to follow through on that. Again, having the right or the proper perception helps us develop the right attitude. The right attitude is also what we need to keep going forward. I think a very important point that we discussed here on page one is we must be able to see the difference between a plan not working or failing and feeling like a failure. If every time we try something it doesn't work away and we constantly are attacking ourselves, well, we're obviously going to reason, well, why keep going forward? Because every time I go forward, I'm going to fail and I'm sick and tired of feeling like a failure. So you've got to learn to draw that line. When we draw that line and have that mastered, we're able to go up to bat a lot more, which in turn is going to give us more home runs. Remember some of the reasons why some people have the fear of success. There's a lot of misconceived ideas out there. It's really, really crazy about success itself and successful people. Watch out for negative associations toward money if this is about your financial goals. Remember, feelings of worthlessness and not feeling deserving is also a reason why people have a fear of success. Watch out, too, for the fear of the unknown. And, of course, last we talked about how to manage the fear of success.
It's me back again in the studio, and I hope you've enjoyed this session on handling the fear of failure and the fear of success. Before we conclude, let's listen in on a one-on-one call.
We've got Catherine calling from Toronto, Canada. Catherine, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Gary?
Very, very good. You've got a question?
Yeah.
Let's get going.
Okay, Gary, as I sent an email to you, I'm saying that I'm having great difficulties in myself in setting goals. I'm seeing the dream, and if I follow my mentor, I know I'm going to achieve the goals, but I sabotage myself every day with excuses or getting busy doing other things and doing other jobs. I have lots of jobs going on just to pay the bills. My question to you now is, how do I retrain my mind and my body and my soul to be motivated?
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What is your definition of motivated?
Motivated is to get up and do what I have to do, what I project to do, what I schedule to do, you know, not to have doubts in my mind or fears that it did not work, you know?
Okay, so there's one of your answers right there. You basically answered your own question. If you are wishy-washy in your thought process,
yes,
you're going to be wishy-washy in your results. So the clue that you just gave me is that you have fears and doubts.
Yes.
So sometimes you have fears and doubts, and when you have a fear and a doubt and you try to reward that type of thinking, is that a thought process that's going to get you excited and move forward? No. When you eliminate that fear and doubt, maybe you listen to one of my programs or you have a good day or something good that happens, and then what happens to the doubt? Now it's no longer there sometimes, right?
Yes.
And when that doubt is no longer there, then you have the thinking of your thinking would be opposite of the doubt. Now you are more concrete in your thinking. Now you're more confident in your thinking. And when you're more confident in your thinking, what happens to your ability to take action? It's there now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what you're actually doing is you are wishy-washy in your thinking, and if you're wishy-washy in your thinking, you'll be wishy-washy in your results. One of the things that I would recommend you do, Catherine, is try to identify what are you allowing cause you to have some of these doubts. In other words, when you feel that you cannot succeed, when you feel that you're not going to be able to go forward, what happened? Is there something that specifically happened? And if so, identify what it is, and then try to determine what you have allowed that circumstance to let you think. How is it making you think now, oh, I can't do it, it's not going to work? And when you start identifying these things, see, a lot of times we don't take the time to identify these things. We often, unfortunately, just get the negative emotion, and we start getting into that emotion even more and more and more, and then we neglect to identify how it happened. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
And I think often, for a lot of people, they don't take the time to analyze a lot of this. They just get, you know, it's the expression I use all the time, it's like, you know, like bumper cars. They get hit on the left, so they go to the right. They get hit from the front, so they go to the back. And we don't want to be that way. When something happens to us emotionally, you know, something triggers us, we need to try to stop and identify what it was. So one of the things I'm going to encourage you to do is just to try to be a little bit more consciously aware of what's going on. And as you're doing that, you're looking for when things happen that you may perceive as negative, what are you allowing it to make you think? Where are you going off on your thinking? See what the thought is, see what we can do to control it. And then on the other hand, when things go well or your thought processes change, where you're now more confident in what you're doing, figure out what happened to cause that. And the goal is for you to try to emulate the confidence as much as you possibly can. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Give me some more that you might have with regards to this question.
Well, this question, again, what happens to me, Gary, is that I get myself in doing other things. You know, I lay out what I have to do. And then after I get myself doing other things that I feel more, that I figure, right, maybe I don't have my priorities right, because I figure, well, this is more important right at this minute to do, and I just get involved in doing that and then doing another thing and not going back to what I actually have to do to succeed.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point you mentioned there too, that not doing what you have to do. And you need to know what specifically has to be done. You need to do you basically need to do something more today than you did yesterday. And if you can't always do that, are you closer today than you were yesterday? And the thing is, there's going to be some times we're going to have some of those days that we're just not going to get anything done. You have one of those days. You know what it's like. But at the same point, when you start your day off, do you have specific things that you need to attack? And a lot of times what people do, and I have a tendency to do it too if I'm not careful, is I'll make the project very big in my mind, and I'll break it down into parts. And that's what we talk about in the goal setting, or setting the goal, about breaking it down into subparts. And if you could just do one little thing, you know, like they say, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So you have to do one little bite and constantly put in your mind that your goals are also the little tiny goals. You know, a goal might be just brushing your teeth to get started. So you got somewhere. You're moving forward. And that's what we need to do when we think about our even long-term goals. What specifically little things can I do that make up the building blocks that I can do right now or within the hour, within 5 hours, or within today, that will build a building block to the next block, to the next block, to create eventually the outcome of the goal.
Right.
And if you break these down in little pieces, it's really the best way to do it. And it's a smart way to do it. Also, sometimes we get overwhelmed, you know, in the day-to-day activities as we work toward our goals. So you might want to just say, okay, today I'm only going to be able to devote 15 minutes toward my goal, or I'm going to devote 1 hour. I would rather you do that than say I'm going to devote all day long, when really you're taking the entire day and wasting time, you know, making excuses why you're not doing what you need to do when it's probably only a 15-minute job. So just tell yourself, okay, it's 9 o'clock, from 9 to 9:15, I'm going to take no distractions, I'm going to go right to it, nose to the grindstone, and go, go, go just for 15 minutes.
Right.
And sometimes if we look at it that way, that also helps us to see that if I start now, there's a reward. Hey, and it's only in 15 minutes. You know, there's nothing wrong with maybe getting to it right now, and in 15 minutes I'm going to see some type of result, or at least see that I have accomplished something. And the fact that you consciously see that you're accomplishing things, number one, does strengthen your belief. It also enables you to feel that you are accomplishing things, which makes you feel better. And usually the fact that you feel good because you're accomplishing things, you kind of get maybe addicted to that feeling, so you want to keep accomplishing more things or completing more things with regards to your goal. And it just kind of snowballs, and you feel better and better.
Right.
Not to minimize the fact that, you know, we do have some rough times.
people who have walked a lot of roads before in experiences find it difficult to kind of focus on any set goals at one time. Do you think that's a problem?
I think so. I don't know about any set goals, but yes, I think so. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, after you hit a certain age, you know, your 40s, 50s, 60s, and it's hard to, wow, I'm going to start something all over again. It does get challenging. There's no question about it. And I know for myself, because I've been through so many things in my life, it's sometimes I get to the point I don't want to take any more risks. It's like, oh my goodness, my whole entire life has been a risk. You know, why do I want to put myself into it even more? Yeah. And I have to catch that thought process. Now, I would not have that thought process if I had not been through all the negative experiences in my life. I really don't believe I would have those thought processes, like sometimes they do creep up. But I do keep a track of them. I do recognize when they happen, and when it's applicable to ignore them, I make sure I ignore them by taking action. But yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to that, unfortunately, and that's where, in fact, when people hire me on a one-on-one basis, and I know that they're in their 60s or in their 70s, that's one of the first things I caution them about, because I look for specific patterns in people's thinking and their lifestyles that are going to increase or decrease their odds of success.
Right.
And if I have somebody that's hiring me that's 70 years old, that right there, in many cases, is a flag to me, a little red flag that goes off, and I say, okay, I want to be very upfront with you. I want you to understand that often, you know, as we get older, we feel like, you know, here I go again. I don't want to start something all over again, and we kind of get mentally burned out. So I definitely let them know that up front. So, yes, there's absolutely some truth to that. But at the same point, if you tap into the right things, you can also get rejuvenated all over again and have a whole new spark and a whole new excitement in you. And hopefully you can achieve that or start to achieve that, so that can propel you to keep going forward and keep that momentum forward. But there's no question about that. That can definitely play on your mind.
Okay, Gary. But that kind of answers a lot of questions for me, because I'm motivated many times. I'm motivated. I go to my meetings and everything, and I come home and I get all, I'm ready to go. And next morning I get up and I said,
yeah, here we go again.
Where do I start?
Right. And when you ask yourself that, that's a bad question. So basically you could ask the same question but ask it differently. Instead of, where do I start? Okay, where do I start?
Yes.
See the difference?
Yes.
And when you ask yourself the question with that type of tone, now you're asking yourself that question with a demand for a specific answer.
Right.
The way you're asking it now, where do I start? You're just saying that, not looking for an answer. And when you say that, it's like, oh, man, there's just too much here. I don't know where to begin. And then we just go ahead and look for something else so we don't have to get started because it's just too much.
Yeah.
So change the way you ask the question.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
Well, keep up the good work, and
thank
hopefully
you,
we'll hear from you in the future.
Yep.
Knowing that you're constantly going forward and you're making things happen and you're achieving your goals.